It's good to see y'all.
Oh, you look so radiant. I love that lipstick color.
Bye.
Oh, thank you. Bye, Harry. Harry doesn't stick around.
No, Harry goes and does Harry things behind the scenes. So how are you this morning?
I'm good.
Dr. Kim Balls Walton?
I am good. Baz Rawls Ivy. Always good to be with you.
Okay, a lot of hearts were broken yesterday. A lot of hearts were broken, but we get it.
That's the hardest part is, you know, the folks that are so excited about this. And, you know, we ran a campaign about transformational change. And there's so many people in this community that need transformational change, not something incremental, not something small. And so to, you know, not be able to follow through all the way to the end of victory and carry that forward for people, that's really the hardest part about this.
So I said earlier in the hour, when you run for office, one, it takes a lot of courage, but the real gift is that you learn the city in ways that you never knew the city, even if you've lived here forever and ever and ever. When you knock on those doors and you in neighborhoods that you don't frequent or go in, or even in your own neighborhood, there's something magical about that. Talk about your experience of going across this city and getting to know all kinds of people.
Oh my gosh, it's been the best. You know, June, we did this thing we called 30 wards in 30 days. And every day we were in a different ward, knocking on doors and talking to voters. And I did, I got to part, and I've been here since I was 17 years old. I have redeveloped properties in some of the most forgotten corners of this city. But still there were so many things to discover. Just going and knocking in doors. And I would love a few things. I would love when I would, you know, we had this little app that would tell you who lived at the house and whatever. So one, it was fun to just like go through the app as I was preparing to go walk and see, oh, so-and-so lives there. And, you know, realize that that's where somebody that I know from some other aspect of my life lives. And so that was always fun. I tell you, I was in the Hill one day, knocking in a door, had a great exchange with a young man. I was actually looking for his mother who wasn't home. So his name wasn't on our list. I was talking with him and it clicked for him who I was. And he told me his name and he had an unusual name. And I said, oh, my son went to school with a young. He was like, I knew you were Kevin's mom. And right. And here's a kid that I haven't seen since my son was in like elementary school. Now grown up, a public school teacher in New Haven, living in the Hill, excited to you know, be able to cast a vote. And so rediscovering people, but hearing people's love of the city, hearing people's concerns and worries, you know, that's what this was all about. This was run to make change for people all across the city who were crying out to me about how unaffordable it is in the city, crying out about their concerns for safety, for their ability to go about their community without fear of harm or violence. People who spoke to me about loved ones they'd lost to gun violence in our community. People who were concerned about our public schools. People who were thinking about going elsewhere, who I was saying, no, stay New Haven, don't leave us, right? Those were the moments that always remind me that's what this is all about. That's what we got in it for. And that's the joy and the love of campaigning.
So were you surprised? Well, maybe not surprised because I think you were quite aware of some of the issues that people were feeling because you were feeling them acutely yourself. Like if you live in a city, you know, if a shooting happens in the Hill, you feel it, or in Newhallville or wherever it is, you feel it. But were you surprised at the depth and the level that people sort of are dealing with this on an everyday basis, feeling like they have no real place to take their concerns.
I wasn't surprised by the depth of the feeling and by the issues, because that's what got me in it. And, you know, I mean, running the housing authority for 14 years, it's like running a little mini city, but a mini city of the most economically challenged families in our community. So all of these issues are the issues that we've been dealing with in our redevelopment of communities and creating greater opportunity for our residents for years and years and years. What got me into this, my surprise was that with the urgency of the issue, that I wasn't seeing urgency of action from local government. And so my surprise was about how is government not reacting to what's happening in our community with the fierceness, with the urgency, with the transformational ideas and vision and to meet the moment. That was what the surprise was for me, not what people's pain was. People's pain was all too evident for me and all too real. And you know, just was deeply rooted in that coming into the campaign.
And I mean, you know, not because you run, you know, the housing authority, but because you were the chief of staff or the CAO for Mayor John DeStefano, who was a very dynamic, a charismatic, in your face kind of mayor. Like he really was, I think, the last of the, you know, I see the whole picture kind of thing. So you have some experience with dealing with issues as they come up and executing rather quickly. Talk a little bit about that experience and because that was an interesting role for you to take on, that level of responsibility for this city.
I did. I served as chief administrative officer and chief of staff in the early to mid 2000s. And saw up close and personal the power of a visionary mayor who was willing to take on big issues that other cities or towns might have thought were not able to be moved or not able to be addressed, and really pushed the envelope. And stuff around reentry started under his administration, and real support and protections for our new immigrant community started under his administration, when in other places, local government wasn't taking these issues on. And, you know, the work that I've been able to carry out over the last 14 years in transforming the housing authority started out a vision of that administration and looking at public housing and saying, no, this can't be in a city that, you know, that we are working to make great for everybody. So I came up in this sense of, you know, what city government can do, the power, the impact on local government, on local citizens' lives when local government is responsive, acts with urgency. And I brought that to the work that I was doing at the housing authority, you know, seeing urgently what it meant to ask people to live in housing that doesn't reflect the kind of housing that you or I or Harry or anybody else wanted to be living in, and saying that that's just not good enough, and really making sure that what we could do was not rebuild one development or two developments, but set a vision to rebuild the entire portfolio. And really proud of the work we've done, and proud to go back there and finish what we have to do at the Housing Authority.
I think, you know, that once upon a time, public housing was seen as housing of the last resort, right? Mm-hmm. Like not a place that anybody would want to live. That was a place where you were stuck for generation after generation, generation. And so it is no easy feat to sort of leverage federal dollars with local opportunities to create good looking housing stock that anybody would be proud to live in. I think the criticism probably of you is that you couldn't do it fast enough.
Well, you know, the criticism I hear is people think, oh, you know, she spends too much money, and I'll fight that criticism all day long. Our families deserve the very best, and they deserve what we've provided for them and built for them. And we have done it in some of the most cost-effective and efficient ways, where we have used the public dollar to leverage private dollar investment at rates of like 3, 4, 5 to 1 private dollar coming into public dollar. So I'll put that record up against anyone. Folks that look at the cost of a redevelopment in our development tend to miss the fact that the majority of that are private dollars that are being leveraged to create something amazing and beautiful for our families. So you know, we hear that criticism, and when I look at people, I hear that, and I wonder, you know, what kind of soul are you that you don't think that people deserve a quality place to live? Like, I'll argue that all day, and I'll keep working on that. And we're about 80% of the way through the portfolio. We've got a couple of demolitions that are about to start soon and rebuild, and then a few other developments that are still in design phase. And it's exciting to know that we are going to be able to look back and see a transformation in this community where people can drive by our developments right now and not even realize that they're driving by public housing or mm-hmm. affordable housing. Folks have often thought Quinnipiac Terrace were condos and have come to sort of ask how they could buy a condo there. And that's what it should be. People should have quality housing that reflects their humanity and their dignity. And we will work hard at that every day to make that happen for every one of our residents.
Okay. So in your mayoral bid, I know it was no easy choice to sort of make the decision to run. And what was that moment like when you said, you know what, I think I should try this now? What was the thinking?
It was that urgency. You know, this, I was seeing a moment in this community where for the first time across sort of all sectors, people were starting to try to struggle with these issues of equity and inequity in our community, and doing it explicitly with language that recognized the racial inequities. And you saw it in the support of the Black Lives Matter movement post George Floyd's murder, and the way that our community came out and marched for that. And you saw how that started to translate into, you know, just about every nonprofit trying to take a stance around this and making a statement around this. And you saw at the state legislative level, you know, police accountability bill moved across the finish line that I know Senator Winfield had been working for a decade before that to try to get some even pieces of that moved. All of a sudden there was energy to get something like that moved. And equity was being thrown around left and right, but in creating this pathway of political will, community desire and interest, legislative will, and then even like at the federal level, money coming in to try to right some of these wrongs, recognizing that the pandemic impacted Black and brown community more harshly because of these long history of inequities. And so there was this moment, and I was expecting to see big things happen in that moment. And the moment, I fear, was passing without New Haven taking the real steps to enact real police accountability reform, or to think about how public policy is actually going to be directed through an equity lens, which became the language. You know, equity work has been what we've been doing at the Housing Authority. Before anybody was talking about it, before it was, you know, popular, we were investing in these deeply underinvested communities. We were shifting the resource into those communities. We were shifting power into those communities. And so it's the approach I expected to see citywide. And unfortunately, that's not what I was seeing. And so that, you know, urgently got my attention. So it was police accountability. I've told people a lot. It was that night in front of One Union Avenue and seeing the mismatch between the leadership we had and what was being called for. It was watching the struggles of the Board of Education and the need for leadership to bring people together so that people could safely come up with a plan, communicate a plan that everybody would have felt comfortable for around, that could have gotten our kids back into school, and sort of not seeing that happen. It was seeing needed rent relief dollars that were now available through the COVID relief money that came in those first couple of tranches, and seeing it bogged down in some creative bureaucracy instead of getting out urgently to the people who needed it. It was seeing, you know, moments to really prioritize and live our values as a community. You think about the stories about the Greer properties being endorsed to get more and more tax benefit off the public dole when they were being accused of fraud and worse than that. And, you know, and seeing a limited view of what city government and role could be that, you know, got me into this. It was learning that the COVID vaccinations that were being touted as this great equity move were actually sweet deal for a fraudulent doctor who was then putting our residents into collections for COVID tests that were supposed to be free. It was all these things that I was just like, wait a minute, what is going on? Where is the urgency to fix? Where's the understanding of this community? Where is the equity approach that would really prioritize what we should be prioritizing this moment? And just feeling like I couldn't sit on the sidelines and not pitch that to the good residents of New Haven as an alternative, as a different way to be. And so we formed a team. We formed a great team, and they've worked really hard. And we've gotten great support all across the city. And I am so thankful to the campaign staff and to the volunteers and to the residents who got excited about this vision. But what I learned through this, Babs, is that it's all about timing, and community has to be ready for transformational change, ready for big vision. And sometimes what the community needs is sort of more stable status quo, sort of keep chugging along. And unfortunately, the pain of so many families that need transformational change, that pain didn't rise to the level an awareness of enough folks across the community to get past this sense of, let's just keep going as we are. Let's not make any big change. It's only been 2 years. And so we had to make an assessment. And the assessment was the same as why I got into this race. It was for the best of the city and what was best for New Haven. And I just decided that that what was best for New Haven right in this moment was not to continue in a very divisive and difficult primary that was going to leave our city fractured. And, you know, potentially incentivize a whole lot of bad behavior that I would not want to see happen in terms of politicizing how the city appointments are made or jobs are given out or COVID money is spent. I didn't want to have any of that happen because we were in the midst of something political between now and November or now and the end of the year. And so it made sense. It made sense to do what was right for the city right now. And, you know, but that's what we did last night at the town committee.
So you're going to look back on this moment at some point. And I don't know if you've done this process. I mean, I know that you're a quick study, but I would like to know, how has this changed you? How has this changed you at your core? Has it made you more courageous, more brave? Has it, what has this done for you to take this experience, this journey?
Oh yeah, right. It's been, I will forever be thankful that I did this, and all for the people that I met. And you know, it's an opportunity to have a dear friend, actually someone you know too, Babs, who talks about these opportunities to stretch and grow. And this has been an incredible opportunity to stretch and grow and go beyond my comfort zone. I had never been a candidate before. I've been around a ton of different political campaigns, always been the supporter or volunteer or a member of an advisory group in different ways, but I'd never been the candidate. It is a totally, as you know, it is a totally different thing to be the candidate. And so absolutely lots of learnings out of this, lots of awareness and fundamentally a doubling down on my own values and knowing of who I wanted to be and making this decision was about the kind of race I wanted to be a part of and wanted to run, and keeping that very aligned with who I am and my values. And that created a real clarity for me around whether to keep pushing or to take a different approach at this point. So I will still be raising every one of these issues that I've raised. The amazing thing about the candidacy is as much pushback as we got from the administration when we would call things out, you also started to see shifts and things change. When we talked about it, when we said, what is going on in this community with crime? You're not giving us any information. We used to get full press briefings. We used to get a lot of information. You know, we're not getting anything. And it leaves the community feeling panicked and unclear and uncertain. And we got a lot of criticism for saying that and calling that out. But you know what else we got? We started to get press conferences and more detailed press briefings about what's going on in our city. And so criticize me, okay. But the win is that we're starting to get more information. So you're starting to do what we have to do. You know, we said you don't get to get this $100 million of COVID relief money into this community and allocate it without a real community process. We were criticized for speaking out and calling for investment in certain things in a community process. But what happened? They launched a community process. And, you know, so I'm going to keep calling out things, certainly around housing and the affordability and the development patterns in this city, because I am very, as someone who's worked in housing, I am right now undoing the harmful policies of predecessors 40 and 50 years ago that created, and hundreds of years ago, that created the segregation that we see within our city and across our state. I'm working in that system right now to dismantle that. And I'm also watching people in policy making decisions right now today, making decisions that are segregating our community. And so I'm going to keep speaking out on that. I'm not going to be quiet while downtown continues to become more and more exclusive, more and more for $3,000 a month rent payers, and excluding more and more other families. I'm going to speak out on that. I'm going to continue to speak out on the rise in crime in this community. And you know, shootings happen without much of a notice from City Hall to let people know what's going on. I will continue to speak out on people getting injured in our community because of gun violence, on people losing their lives in this community, and demanding that we get to our newest version and best version of what community-based policing can look like in New Haven. I'll keep speaking out on behalf. I don't have kids in the public school system anymore, but I got thousands of kids who come home to Elm City community properties who I love like they were my kids. Teenagers that intern with us, young people that take advantage of the programming we offer. I will fight like heck for them to get the best that they can get out of this public school system. So I'm not going anywhere. Just doing it from a different perspective, a different platform.
So now that you've tasted the candidate's bug, do you think you'll run again? Is that or is it too early to sort of think about that?
It is right at this point. I'm going to exhale. This has been a crazy whirlwind, amazing opportunity. I'm going to exhale. I'm going to reacquaint myself with those three people that live in my house that I haven't seen in months, my husband and my two sons, Kevin and Caleb, and breathe for a minute. Then I'll go back to work. I have missed my team. I have missed my residents. I will be thrilled to go back to a job that I love. You know, it was great to launch into this from something that I love doing. It wasn't like I had to run away. Not that I needed a job. It's not that I hated what I was doing. It was about trying to really amplify what we were building at the Housing Authority by having impact citywide. So I'm thrilled to go back there. And you know what? Like this moment was all about timing and what the community was ready for. It's hard to predict what the future will be, because again, it'll be about timing and what's coming together at any point in time. But I don't close the door to anything. I have loved this, and who knows? Let's stay tuned and see what comes next.
I'm gonna stay tuned. Before I let you go, because I know you gotta go and work and do all the things that you're doing. So it's very difficult for Black women to sort of step into these roles. I mean, we have to work so much harder to go out there and run. You know, we have to raise. It's harder for us to raise money. Harder for us to get into community. I mean, it's just hard for us. And then on top of it, we have to have a thicker skin than most. How did you develop a thicker skin? Because there were criticisms, lots and lots of criticism. And how did you maneuver those waters? And were there moments where criticism got on your nerves?
I got to say, I feel for Erica Badu. You know, I'm sensitive about my stuff. So I don't know that I have a thick skin. I feel deeply. I mean, my background, I'm a clinical psychologist because I connect to people and people's stories, and I take it in deeply into my soul, and I don't ever want to stop being a deeply feeling person. And that means that also, yeah, my feelings get hurt. But for me, the thing is to keep my eye on the prize, right? Remember what I got in this for, and it was never about me, right? It wasn't about the glory of me. It was about the people I was fighting for. So if I got my feelings hurt or I felt sad, I tried to focus on why I was doing it, who was most important in this work. And then this is about the support system, right? It's always having folks around who could speak life when others were speaking death and destruction. And so making sure that I had that. But it is a challenge. It's a challenge to be a Black woman in a race like this. There are challenges about the Blackness. There are challenges about the womanness. There are challenges about the intersection of that. There are ways in which I'm not enough of this or too much of that. And so that's the challenge of being a Black woman in public service or running for public office. And that's part of the growth for the community as we figure out what does it really mean to be an equitable community and to lead from a place of equity and to support leaders from a place of equity and to build power from a place of equity. It's going to require us to deal with all of those intersections and all of the biases that you know even the most enlightened of us have to reckon with still, right? We have to dig deeply around, you know, what is it that still makes us think a leader has to look a certain way, be a certain, present in a certain demographic? That's some deeply held stuff that we just have to be aware of and reckon with and be ready to take on if we are a leader who doesn't fit that traditional mold. I'm down for it. I'm down for it.
So what's the last good book you've read? I know you haven't had a chance to read a damn thing while you were on the campaign trail. But what's the last moving book that you read that sort of that made you sort of say, "Yeah, this is good for me"? Or,
I've taken something away
from this.
What's next? It's going to be the stack, right? The stack by my bed is like this tall right now, of good books that I have
collected,
heard someone talk about, and
yes.
Yeah, and put in my notes and then gone and ordered to pick up. You know what? I don't know. I can't even think of what the last thing I read was. This is a shame because it's been a minute. But I did. You know what? Actually, be one of the last things I just read, which I want to recommend because I just did a panel where I got to facilitate with the two authors, Joanne Goldblum and Colleen Shattuck. Broken America. You should read that.
I have it. They were
both because they are amazing women in our community who are doing powerful work. Joanne started the diaper bank locally and nationally, and Colleen is a writer. And you should read it because it's amazing. And it puts in perspective so many of the issues, and it challenges us to think about the things, unfortunately, that get accepted in this country of great wealth. That there are people who actually don't have access to clean water. And there are people that don't have access, that have food insecurity, and there are people who you know live in housing or are unhoused, live in housing they can't afford or are unhoused, and all of these things because we have made it acceptable. We've made it okay to have these great income disparities and to have people live with so little in our community, and just brings home that poverty is a policy choice that this country has made. And we have the ability to make other choices. So I would suggest read that. I have some good nonfiction. Some good fiction stuff. I'm going to get to on vacation when I get to take a vacation and before I go back to work. And
yes.
Then I'll update you on whatever I've read. Then I've been following your porch reading though. So I've added a few things. You're doing home going right now. That's on my list, which I don't have.
That thing is. I've never read anything quite like this.
Yeah, that's next to my bed.
It is quite
interesting. People say it's hard to get through.
It's you know what I mean? It's, you know, I want to say it's like a Toni Morrison light. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, okay.
It weaves a lot of things and things that you never considered about slave trade and what that intimacy looked like. You know, the intimacy, these nuanced things. And it's really and I posted it and lots of people have chimed in saying, oh, you know, I'm reading it now. And how are you liking it? I love it. I absolutely love it because I love language. But it is, it's a hard intellectual spirit dragging thing to read this book. So it's enjoyable, but it's quite thought provoking. So I might need a therapist after this. Like I have to, it really made me think about some things a whole lot differently in terms of.
Wow.
Whiteness and Blackness and the intersection of that. And so, yeah, it's a lot. Ooh. But yeah, so
okay.
I always like to see what people are reading because that'll tell you a lot about a person about the stuff that they read.
So true. And I am usually with a book. I have missed because at the end of a long day of campaigning, it was usually all I could do to get something to eat and go to sleep. So I'll be glad to get back to some books.
Well, I must say, I've enjoyed watching your campaign. It was a joy to see. I heard the criticism that people were like, oh, she's being mean. And I'm thinking, I know you personally. I was like, mean is not the word you want to use here. I think what you want to say is on point, because, you know, it was never a personal attack. It was always, listen, the structure, the issue, the thing is cracked, and we need to sort of get, you know. So I always felt like it never felt personal to me, although it felt personal to me because I wanted to speak for you, but I enjoyed your campaign. I thought you were beautiful in your press conferences, the materials that you put out. You were very hard hitting and fact driven, and it's been a long time since
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. What some folks might have thought was harsh was the passion of the fact that lives are being lost, kids are missing opportunity, and I feel very passionately about that, very, very urgently. And if folks aren't moving, then I'm going to speak out on it. And I don't apologize for that. But I do thank you.
Thank you. It's such a treat to have you. I've been wanting to have you on for quite some time. I had Sinead Drawn on, and she was she was so good. It's so much fun talking about.
Having Sinead as a number two made this so much easier to think about how could I step away from that work, because she stepped in at Elm City Community. She had been doing the Glendower development work for almost as long as I've been there. I think she's been there like 12 years, but had great wealth of experience to do the other parts of the job as well. And so it has been so relieving to know that it was in good hands with Sinead. So yeah, I got to catch a bit of her show when she was, I caught the replay.
When do you go back to work? Like, when do you step back into your role as, all thing housing?
I'm sure Sinead is waiting to hear the answer to this one too. She will want to get back to her regular
tag
role.
Tag me out. I'm ready.
I will give Sinead a call. We'll discuss it, and I'll let you know. But I expect I'll take a few weeks. To just download, process, exhale, and then go back.
Oh, thank you so much. I know where you're going for vacation. Enjoy it. It's our happy place. Have a good time.
Thank you.
Relax, and just know that you ran a damn good campaign. I
appreciate you.
Yeah. So, thank you, my love.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Bab.
All right.
See you soon.
Bye. Woohoo! Karen DeBose Walton. Hey, Harry. It's time for us to go. He's a class act, Harry. Class act.
Yeah.
This is what you want politicians to be. You want them to be class act. You know what I mean? Unlike me, Harry, I would have just been, I'd have been a Tasmanian devil, but that's why I'm sitting here and not over there. She's a class act.
I would have been like Deuces, but with two fingers that.
Yeah, that's the difference between, a class act and
that's right.
Classless. Saying we know what lane we belong in, Harry, and we happily stay in it. So but I thought she ran a damn good campaign. I honestly, and I've been in politics for the better part of my adult life. I've seen all kinds of candidates really ran an honorable campaign, which is no easy feat to do in this day and age. You know politics, Harry. Go for the jugular, damn the repercussions. That called out things as she saw it, and she walked in truth. I applaud that. So, and I'm a fan girl. So, and people will criticize me like, oh, you didn't go harder. Damn you! I don't need to go harder. My show, I do what I want. I talk to her the way I want to talk to her. This is how I talk to people, Harry. Harry, I'm not interested in that other mess. I'll leave that to other people. But I just wanted her to come on and just, you know, talk to the people. You know, personally, just talk to me.
You're right. I mean, you leave the gotcha questions to Paul.
Yeah. You know, let Paul do it in his in his 20-minute interviews. I'm sorry, 22 minutes, 23-minute interviews. I'll let Paul do that for 23 minutes. I like a different kind of conversation. One that's rooted in what I'm interested in. So, oh, thank you, Harry, for a wonderful Wednesday. Now I'm going to make my way to Robert to the gym, and we'll be back tomorrow.
All right.
Tomorrow's Thursday.
Same bad time, same bad channel.
I know. Oh, you dated yourself.
I know. All right. Bye.